Welcome to A Brit in LA with star of stage and screen, Lauren Samuels. Each week, she'll be navigating different areas of the US entertainment industry after swapping London for La La Land. She'll be meeting inspiring figures who are achieving their own Hollywood dreams.
It's Lauren and welcome back to A Brit in LA. If you haven't already, please do give this podcast a follow so that you never miss an episode. It really does help keep the show alive. Also, remember that you can get in touch with me via our website, abritinla.fm. Now, I have something a little bit different for you today, guys. Megan Doughty Asimi is a certified trauma recovery coach who specializes in healing high conflict relationships by addressing your nervous system, beliefs, and boundaries. I've always been fascinated by how past events in our lives can shape the way that we are as human beings in the future, and how our mind-body connection can steer us towards potentially unhealthy choices and relationships. The entertainment industry can, let's be fair, be a pretty toxic place sometimes. You know, there are a lot of egos flying around, that's for sure. So it's incredibly important that we take time to focus on our mental health now more than ever. Megan was so insightful and relatable. I learned so much during our chat. We dive into, you know, what exactly trauma recovery coaching is, the subject of love bombing, which I learned all about, advice on what to do yourself if you feel that you're in a high conflict relationship, different types of narcissism. I mean, there's everything in there. So I really hope that you enjoy today's chat as much as I did. Megan, welcome to A Brit in LA.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
I've got to start. We just chatted before we started recording about how I'm a complete novice to this subject. So the first thing I want you to do is, can you explain exactly what a trauma recovery coach is?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm a certified trauma recovery coach. I actually specialize in relational trauma. So that is, you know, high conflict relationships with, you know, narcissistic people that are, you know, always on the defense, always on the offense. It can be relationships in your romantic scene. It can be family. It can be friends. It can be work environments, a lot of toxic work environments. So as a trauma recovery coach, what I do is I help people that have gone through those high conflict relationships, and I help them bring their body, mind, and nervous system back into regulation. I help them learn how to kind of move through relationships in a more healthy way, how to get rid of any of the trauma that's left behind. Like, a lot of people have, you know, issues with, you know, continuing to stand up for themselves, set boundaries, especially when it's like a family situation or something like that. So that's what I do. Yeah, I help people kind of come back to themselves, come back to being in autonomy, governing their own selves, and how to just resolve conflict in their lives. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. And what exactly is the difference between a therapist and a coach?
Yeah. That's a really good question.
You must get asked this a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great question. And I always say, first of all, I'm not a therapist. I don't want to be a therapist. You have to completely, totally different job. I do work closely with a lot of therapists if there is somebody who actually needs therapy. So that's, you know, that's okay. Important to state. But yeah, so a therapist is more someone that's going to go into the past, right? We're going to keep going into the past. We're going to dig into everything that you went through, talk therapy. We're going to go through over and over and over again until you kind of make sense of it for yourself, right? That's what a therapist is going to do. It's going to help. They're going to help you unravel a lot of things that happened in your past and help you kind of connect the dots as well, which is very similar to coaching as far as connecting the dots. With coaches, we come from what is happening in your life right now. Like, how is that situation affecting you today? Is it right. Stopping you from being able to wake up in the morning? Is it stopping you from, you know, standing up for yourself at work or not, you know, experiencing burnout because you can't tell them that, hey, that's not part of my job because you're a people pleaser? You know, how is it affecting you today? And how do we set goals to get rid of any of that that's left behind? So we set actionable goals and we move towards that. Another thing with the coach, especially if you're a practitioner like myself, is we go right into dealing with the nervous system, right into dealing with the anxiety. We do, you know, breath work, cold therapy, all of these things just to kind of ground you into your body in the present moment And that over time is what heals your nervous system and allows you to kind of move through the world in an easier way. So it's, you know, think about a therapist. We're going to go into the past. We're going to talk a lot about, you know, maybe like, you know, your inner child and the whole story of what they went through. Today, we're talking about as a coach, okay, how did your inner child run your life right now? And how do we redirect that?
Right. Okay. So someone might work with a therapist before coming to you or at the same time as you.
Yeah, it really just depends, you know, if therapy is needed, you know, if you're in the thick of, you know, deep depression, if you've been diagnosed with certain mental health and emotional health diagnosis, then that means that you need to go to a therapist, right? Right. There's a lot of people that have been to therapy for, you know, a few years and find out that, you know, with my coaching, it's very niched, right? A lot of therapists are kind of like the surface level, like let's help you work through the surface level of things. But with my specialty, you know, understanding, you know, narcissism, understanding, you know, how it affects survivors. Myself, having been diagnosed with complex post-traumatic stress disorder, right. That's a very, very niche, and that's a specialty that I'm in. So a lot of times people, you know, go to therapy for a couple years. If they're so lucky to find a therapist that helps, you know, we could talk about those stories as well. I went through the same thing. But a lot of times, you know, you need somebody that specializes in those type of high conflict relationships. So right. Then they come to me and then we work on, you know, bringing you from the present to the future with actionable right. goals. So, yeah.
So would you say that, that this is kind of like trauma survivors are an underserved community? Like there needs to be more resources like yourself?
100%. That is right. exactly the reason why I got into this. That is exactly okay. the reason, because of my own personal experience. I saw 3 to 4 different mental health professionals, all of which, you know, fabulous people, you know, let me say that. But they just didn't understand the scope of psychological abuse. They just didn't understand the scope of emotional abuse and how it affects your nervous system. So it was a matter of me going into different, you know, sterile offices for a couple of years and not understanding that the relationship that I was in was affecting me physically. You know, not understanding that the symptoms that I was explaining was my nervous system, anxiety, panic, and that it was connected to that emotional abuse. So when you get into being a trauma recovery coach, you're niched in that specific field where you understand that there's a direct correlation between how your body and your nervous system is reacting and the trauma that you went through. So
right. Yeah. So that's one of my questions was going to be, how did you get into this line of work? So for you, it was more like you needed it and you couldn't find it. So then yeah. you thought, right, well, this is something that I want to do now to help other people like myself.
Absolutely. Yes, I needed it. And I also needed somebody to help me make sense of what I went through, because that's the lion's share of healing from this type of abuse, from these type of relationships, is make sense of what you went through. Because a lot of my clients, they come and they're just like, I have spent hours and hours and hours Googling, you know, Googling reactions, Googling behaviors, Googling why my body is reacting in a certain way. I thought I was losing my mind, you know, that it was affecting me, you know, physically as well. So a lot of it, you know, comes down to really understanding, you know, exactly what you went through. And when you are able to put it in the space, so, okay, this is the type of person that I was dealing with. This is the situation that I was in. I'm not crazy. This really yeah. happened, you know, then you're on your way to healing.
So when you realized that it was something that you did want to explore as a career, how did you discover sort of how to train? Is there like a school or what was your journey with that?
Yeah, there's multiple. There's a company called ICF that you can go through, and they're basically like the certification for coaches. You don't have to have those type of certifications, but you go on to their websites and there's accredited institutions that you go through training with. And so you go through your initial trainings, but then there's more, you know, niche trainings that you go through as well. So I also went through that when it comes to somatic experiencing, when it comes to high conflict family resolution. There's multiple different certifications that I got. And I would still to this day, you know, if I wanted to learn more about, you know, early childhood development and how I can coach in that realm, I would still go and get another certification. So it's definitely a process. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That was going to be one of my questions. So there's different kind of avenues of focus? Like you say that you deal with high conflict relationships, but I guess are there different avenues for trauma from natural disasters or, serving in combat zones or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah. And then, you know, that those specialties are going to be more therapists or psychiatrists, you know, because those are, you know, what we call big T traumas. There's big T traumas and there's little T traumas. So big T traumas is what we've known of for, you know, hundreds of years. So you want to go to a therapist or a psychiatrist for things like that. Little T traumas and complex trauma is something that happens over time in little bits. Okay. So over time in little bits, you can go to a coach that'll help you compartmentalize that, because it is definitely focusing on the little wins every single day that helps you heal. So,
right. So it's not just like one huge event in your life that happens.
Right. 100%. That's how you can delineate the two. Yeah.
And it must be incredibly rewarding for you as well then to work with your clients, having been through it yourself. Work with people. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the lived experience, I say it all the time when it comes to, you know, these type of issues, the lived experience really matters. It truly does. Like it is very, very, I love to, you know, meet people and they first figure out, you know, you went through this as well. So you're not sitting here, you know, judging me like, oh, you know, thinking that, you know, what are you on about? Like, you know, and I'm like, I totally understand. You know, of course, you know, throughout my sessions, I'm not saying I went through that too, but, you know, I'm making sure that they don't feel alone, that they don't feel crazy, that they don't feel like they're losing their mind. I went through some of the same exact things. So it's really easy to speak to that stuff. Lived experience as well as the training really, really helps. So
yeah, I guess the judgmental thing, I can understand that, sitting opposite someone and maybe not thinking that they're judging you for these things that you're feeling, particularly like you said, if you're feeling like, am I crazy?
That's one of the main questions. That's one of the main sentiments. Like, I felt like I was losing my mind. Help me make sense of this, you know? So it really helps.
Your website is lovebombedmd.com. But I've got to ask, what is love bombing?
What is that? That's a big question there. So love bombing is a form of emotional manipulation. There's a lot of different types of people, a couple different types of people that can use love bombing. A lot of times we, you know, equate it to narcissists, and, you know, we'll get into kind of delineating between like NPD, you know, a diagnosis of narcissistic personality disorder, narcissistic traits, and somebody that kind of engages in the cycle of narcissistic abuse, because it is very different. It's very, very different. And that actually delineates between, like, you know, what therapists specialize in and what a coach can help you with as well.
A plant behind Megan has just fallen down.
That is a small T trauma right there.
Right, we need coaching over this plant. What is it doing? It's trying to steal the limelight.
It triggered me a little bit. Yeah. It looks okay like that right there, but we'll leave it. We've got a little bit of greenery still. So. Trying to think, where were we actually?
So we're talking about love bombing. That was the main question.
So not all narcissists actually use love bombing, but most do, right? So love bombing is just a form of emotional manipulation. It's let's talk about it within like a romantic setting, right? So you meet somebody, and within the first couple days of, you know, dating them, they're like, you know, you're the best person in the world. Like, you know, you're my soulmate. I've never met anybody better. You know, they bombard you with communication, like nonstop. They bombard you with, I love you. So, you know, I want to marry you, within the first like 2 to 3 days or week, right? So that's the love bombing. It could also be like lavish gift giving. I'm just putting you on a pedestal. The other word for it is called idolization, meaning they idolize you in an unrealistic way, right? They hold you to this unrealistic expectation, you know, like they haven't even got to really connect with your humanity, but it's because it doesn't matter. Love bombing is just a way for them to get you dialed in really quick, addicted to them, kind of dialed into the future of being with them. You know, if they're like,
it feels good, right?
It feels so good. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So it's like, okay, I've been waiting for this all my life. I've been waiting for somebody to come and realize how amazing I am and say that they're like madly in love with me. Right. And, you know, as women, when we were younger, we see the Disney movies, right? The princes just swoop in all like angelically, and they're like, you know, I love you. I've been searching for you all my life, you know? And that is literally what love bombing is, before they even get to know you. But the purpose of that is to get you just hooked, dialed in very quickly. So then soon after the love bombing, everything switches. Okay. But okay. Now you're dialed into the, you know, the fantasies that they sold you, the future faking, if you will. So yeah.
Future faking. I like that. Future so it's faking. Kind of like a drug. You've become like addicted to this kind of love bombing. And then when it's taken away from you, you want it again.
100%, right on the nail. And you know, to go deeper in that, your body is physiologically addicted to love bombing. So a mixture between your reward hormones and your stress hormones, it feels like addiction. So breaking that addiction, wow. Leaving the person, deciding you no longer want to be in the relationship, yeah, it can be compared to detoxing from a heavy drug. So your body is actually wow. Physiologically addicted to the person, yeah.
And this might be a strange question, but does the person that's doing the love bombing know that they're doing that?
100%. Yeah, wow. Absolutely. It is very calculated. It is very purposeful. Okay. Mm. So that the love bombing, I say, is the most important. You know, if you're in the actual abuse cycle, the love bombing is the most important part, because without that, you know, as soon as they start, all the red flags start popping up, you know, as soon as the criticism starts and the devaluation starts, then you'd probably be like, no, I'm good on this. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you know, this is not for me. With the love bombing, yeah, you're addicted. You're dialed in. You're like, and then you're sitting there, you're like, you know, where is this person that I met at the beginning? I want them to come back. So then you get in this loop of staying and excusing behavior and just like hoping that, you know, this behavior that they showed in the beginning and this like Prince Charming is going to come back. And it's right. Also important to mention that love bombing does not only happen in romantic relationships. Okay. It happens in family dynamics. I talk a lot about the narcissistic family system, and you know, that's not the only type of family that this happens in, but it does happen in family dynamics where, you know, somebody is on a loop of disrespectful behavior or like, you know, traumatic behavior, and then they come back around with the, you know, the gifts and the, you know, but we're family, I love you so much, and all these things without any real repair of what they actually did, without any real conflict resolution, because they want to get past it very quickly. So they may actually use money, they may actually use gifts, you know. So this happens in the family system as well, this happens in religious organizations as well, and it also happens in friendships. So it's basically, it can happen at the very beginning in romantic relationships. I think that's how most people are familiar with it. But it also happens in a cyclical form when it comes to kind of like the drama or trauma cycle. So
right. Yeah, I think yeah. I've definitely heard of the love bombing in at the start of a relationship, but I don't think I've thought of it in family settings or anything like that. So if it was going to be in like a family setting, would that wouldn't be necessarily right at the start of the relationship, because you'd be a child.
Yeah, right.
But sort of forever then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, when we talk about kind of the cycle of narcissistic abuse, love bomb, devalue, discard, and hoover you back in. So there's a cycle, right? So if you're in a family system or even in a work environment or in a, you know, religious organization, you're on that cycle. So, you know, you don't have to start from the love bombing, but you're in there. Maybe this person is highly critical, you know, highly antagonistic. And then they discard you when you try to hold them accountable, you know, for what they did to you. And then, you know, they come back around, try to hoover you back in with, you know, I'm sorry, that kind of thing. Like, let's go on a vacation. I love you so much. Like, here's some money. You know, that investment that you were talking about? I have 50 grand. Here you go. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the love bombing. And then after that, the tension builds and then it starts over. The abuse starts right. over. So it's very cyclical. So if you're in a family, you know, you definitely can kind of identify that pattern of going through that pattern over your life with like a parent or a caregiver.
Okay. And you said just before we started talking about love bombing, the different types of narcissistic behavior.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of thought there was just a narcissist.
Yeah. You know, I would say that I agree with that. But there's a lot of kind of argument debates about this online. And a lot of the reason why I like to delineate between this is because, you know, you'll hear somebody say, well, you have to have a diagnosis to know if that person is a narcissist, right? So a lot of, you know, people are kind of up in arms about us even talking about narcissism. You know, you need a licensed professional to talk about that. But that is not actually true. And there's a lot of, there's an amazing doctor named Dr. Romney. I don't know if you're familiar with her work,
no.
But she's a trailblazer in this field of narcissism that talks about not medicalizing narcissism. So I've trained under her as well. And, you know, I really like to follow her, her work. But, you know, there is a diagnosis called narcissistic personality disorder. Okay. And there's a book called the DSM where licensed professionals use that to diagnose narcissism. The thing is that probably 0.0001% of narcissists would ever go to get a diagnosis or ever think that there was anything right. wrong with them, right?
Of course, because they're a narcissist.
Right, because they're a narcissist, right? They're not the problem. Why would they go to somebody that to help them? You know what I mean? Why would they take accountability? Like, what is that, right? So the thing is, there's a very, 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 very small percentage of them that would ever even get diagnosed. Okay, so that's narcissistic personality disorder. And arguably, the DSM is extremely outdated. And it really, really needs to be updated when it comes to, you know, kind of the trailblazing research and data when it comes to narcissism and other mental health disorders. So there's that. And then you have people that show narcissistic traits, okay? So that's going to be just, you know, the maybe they don't have narcissistic personality disorder, but they have the entitlement, the grandiosity, the they feed off of like emotional reactivity, that kind of thing. They're very self-absorbed. And it's funny because years ago, people thought that that was the only thing that encompassed narcissism. Like, oh, I love myself. I'm looking in the mirror every day. It is absolutely not that, right?
Okay.
It is not that. So you have those people that, you know, the entitlement, the grandiosity. We have the three E's of narcissism: entitlement, exploitation, and the lack of empathy, okay? So that is going to be like strong narcissistic trait. That in the middle is what I call a narcissist, you know? That's going to be through and through a narcissist. Okay. And you don't need a licensed professional to tell you. If you've been through that, you know. You know, it's a very identifiable, you know, cycle that you go through. It's very identifiable characteristics that you go through. Your body, everybody's bodies and minds and nervous system reacts the exact same, you know? So if you've gone through that, you don't need a licensed professional to tell you that that person is a narcissist, for the record.
Right.
And then there's the, you know, that cycle of narcissistic abuse that I continue to talk about. So it can be a family system, you know, a narcissistic family system. It can be a work setting. It can be a religious organization. It can be a cult. You know, it might, there might not be one specific narcissist at the head of it. Most of the time there is. But just the cycle is very narcissistic and it's very identifiable. So, yeah.
Okay. I feel like the word narcissist gets thrown around a bit too much.
Gosh, maybe it absolutely does. You know, it absolutely does. And I think a large part of that as well is people, once you give people language that is very beneficial to what they have been through, you know, they might actually kind of stick it on somebody that's just like, I'll say like a run of the mill asshole. You know what I mean? Like I can deal with like
yeah,
you know, I can deal with an honest asshole, like a run of the mill asshole. You know, I don't want to deal with them, but I can go toe to toe with them. I'm good. You know?
Yeah.
That's not necessarily a narcissist. You know, not everybody that broke up with you, not everybody that cheated on you, not everybody that was dishonest with you is a narcissist. You know, just like not everybody that's disagreeing with your version of reality is gaslighting. Right. You know, and so that's another word that's very used. Yeah. So, but it really takes, it's a very nuanced conversation and it really takes to understand, like who you're communicating with to know if they actually experience narcissistic abuse or if they're just kind of a lover scorn that was with an asshole, you know what I mean?
Yes.
But I never like to, you know, I never, you know, me as a coach and me as an advocate, more importantly, I never want to invalidate, you know, anybody's situation. So I kind of stay out of those conversations. I'm like, okay, if you think they were narcissists, you know, and I'm pretty sure the people that you're explaining are on to the next victim. You know, they don't care that they're being labeled a narcissist. You know, if they are actually a narcissist, they are definitely on to their next supply. So I'm sure they're not lining up crying outside of the therapist's office to get, you know, diagnosed. Well, so we're good.
Yeah, we spoke about that just now. Like what if you're the problem and not the victim? Do people ever recognize that in themselves?
Yeah, you know what? When it comes to actually When it comes to self-awareness, in order to heal, you have to be self-aware, right? You really have to be self-aware. And I think that's a delicate process of having a very safe container as a coach and having somebody that can actually lead you through the process. Because once you get into a safe container with somebody like me, then, you know, there will be a little bit of self-discovery about maybe how you contributed to the trauma, or how you allowed it to continue, or how your own trauma and maybe some narcissistic traits played off of that, right? But that's, like I said, a very delicate process that comes like in a safe container after you have made sense of everything, after you're emotionally safe, after your body, your nervous system feels safe, right? I have never personally encountered anybody that came to me and I initially was like, after we started unpacking, was like, yeah, you know, you might be the problem. Like, you might, you know, I've never actually experienced that, thankfully. Yeah. And one thing that's really important to know is that a lot of people that end up in these type of narcissistic relationships, one of the main things that a narcissist will do is say, you're the narcissist, you're the problem, you're toxic, right? So it's really important to tread lightly when it comes to that, because a lot of, you know, a lot of people in these situations did leave that relationship thinking I was the issue, you know, I was, I'm the narcissist, I'm the issue, like, you know, I'm always the one with the issue. And it was really just a form of manipulation that made them think that they were the problem. So yeah, it's extremely, extremely delicate process. So yeah.
And I suppose certain traumas from people's past might, they might attract certain kinds of people. They might continually get into the cycle of dating narcissistic people. Is that fair to say?
Oh, 100%. I was one of those people like, hi, it's me. I'm the problem. Yeah. in this situation. And I love to talk about this because, you know, from a very personal standpoint, I, you know, saw narcissistic relationships almost my entire life. You know, my mom, I love her to death, we're so close, but everybody that she's ever married with was a raging narcissist. So, you know, it's something that was kind of modeled to me. And a lot of times it can be enmeshed with certain cultures. It can be enmeshed with certain religious expectations. And so you're modeled that. So you think, you know, this is how men show up in a relationship. And to be fair, you know, there's plenty of narcissistic women, and we can get into that as well. But, you know, speaking from personal experience, you know, it's like, well, this is how men, you know, lead. And it's very forceful. And it's very like, you know, self-centered, very entitled, you know, and they don't really have any empathy. They're not really soft and that kind of thing. So that was kind of modeled, you know. So then I became that, you know, 16-year-old that the first boyfriend that I had acted that exact same way. You know, I had to give up all of my autonomy. He was very controlling. And I thought, okay, this is normal, you know? So when I look back on it, when I went through this last very, very traumatic relationship that ended about 6 or 7 years ago, I realized retrospectively that every single person that I dated had been a narcissist. And there was a lot of traits in those men that I could see in the men that were caregivers in my life growing up, right? And so there is, for myself and a lot of other survivors, we talk about repetition compulsion, where you haven't actually resolved the trauma from those initial narcissistic relationships. So your nervous system is drawn to what's familiar, not to what's safe. Okay. So you're drawn, right. So you're drawn to what's familiar, and then your nervous system and your inner child sees this as a way of completing that trauma. If I can get this person to treat me right, then I'll feel like I've healed that situation that I was in when I was younger.
I see.
Yeah. So you get on this loop of repetition compulsion where you're dating the same exact people trying to get a different outcome. It never actually happens, but it's a very primal, it's a very like a primal process that happens in us until you stop it, until you stop the cycle and realize that, okay, I'm never going to resolve that in this way by putting myself back in harm's way and back in the same type of relationships, right? So I have to do something different. I have to understand that I deserve softness. I deserve empathy. I deserve reciprocity. And how do I change that? You know what I mean?
So it's work as well that you have to almost do on yourself.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, what is it in me that hasn't healed yet? You know, what is my inner child like looking for? And once you do that, and that's the only time it's really, you know, you have to sit like in a room with yourself and really just look within, right? You're not blaming yourself for what you went through. you know, it all makes perfect sense, but you do have to figure out, okay, what are the wounds in me that they were basically attracting them and like plugging right into the system that was already in me, and how can I change that? So, yeah.
On your website, people can find access to your coaching, which include, you know, 1 hour one-to-one coaching, or you do different 6 to 8 week programs as well. What do the sessions involve, and how might someone know what kind of program or session to take?
Yeah. So right now, the only ones that I have available are 1 hour, 2 hours. But I have done the six week and 8 week containers before. And those were very different. You know, some of the 6 week containers were just about love alchemy. So it was just about like romantic relationships. And then I have radical reparenting when I start to get really heavy into the whole narcissistic parent and recovering from that, adult children and narcissists. So those would be completely different. But when it comes to one-to-one, we usually start off by, you know, unpacking a little bit of your story, and you know, figuring out like kind of what drew you here, and the whole self-awareness around what happened. You know, let's get an understanding about what happened to you. And then we start to kind of connect the dots, you know, we start to connect the dots of, you know, why is it that you were in this situation? How long did you stay? What kept you in the relationship? You know what I mean? How is it affecting you right now? And then we go through everything from healing the nervous system. We can do, you know, the meditation, the breath work there, grounding you into your body, giving you the opportunity to grieve, because that's a big thing. The grieving process when it comes to these relationships is huge. Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, I really let the client kind of lead, you know, the sessions when it comes to, you know, certain aspects of their story, because a lot of people come to me and they're just like, there's these specific things that keep me up at night and I need you to help me make sense of it, you know? Right. So it really, really just depends. Everybody is different, and I like to get to know people, and, you know, within the first 10 minutes of being in the session, I usually get a feel of, you know, what direction we're going to go. A lot of people, you know, like I said, really need help just kind of grounding into their body in the present moment. They need help with kind of, you know, understanding that it wasn't their fault and grieving in the moment. And then we can do that. And a lot of people just want to understand it. A lot of people just want to, you know, talk for an hour and really understand it. And then I have a lot of resources that I give that they go home with when it comes to, like, you know, journaling, exercising, grieving exercises, and all of these things that they, you know, can use the tools. So.
Right. So there are certain steps to healing that you will use, but everybody's journey is obviously different.
Absolutely. Yes. And some of the 6 to 8 week, those are very kind of structured. But again, I'm always like, you know, I'm always a little flexible, because when it comes to people that have experienced trauma, you don't want to have this like rigid, like, we have to do this right now. Yeah. It doesn't feel good, you know? So that's why I'm, you know, very careful when I explain, you know, what happens in these sessions, because, you know, we're going to do what's best for you and what helps you feel safe and grounded in the moment. So if it's too much, we're not going to do it.
Yeah, of course. What advice would you give someone who might be resonating a lot with what we've been talking about, right? It can feel, I suppose, scary to reach out for help, or that people might not understand necessarily. What advice would you give right now to somebody?
Yeah, I would say definitely continue to research, you know, continue to research what you went through. There's so many great books out there that talk about these type of relationships. You know, do your own research if you're not, you know, right now so comfortable with going to somebody that can help. You know, there's a lot of, like I said, Dr. Romney is like a great resource. You know, my page, I have a lot of free resources on that. You know, go through, just read through this stuff. And a lot of times it's just about connecting the dots. You'd be very surprised. I get messages very, very often with people that say, you know, I've never actually worked with you because I wasn't able to at the moment, but just reading through your page has helped me heal over the last couple of years, you know? So look out for those resources on YouTube and, you know, Instagram and those kind of things, you know, trusted actual providers. And then I definitely always recommend, you know, getting guidance, you know, once you're ready to pull the trigger, you know, reach out to somebody like me or somebody that, you know, really resonates with you. And yeah, so we can help you through the process. It is very, a lot of it is really just compartmentalizing everything and understanding what you went through. You know, that's the biggest steps that kind of is like, okay, I've been in this rut for like a year trying to understand this. Mm-hmm. Once you kind of get into the space where it's like, okay, somebody's helping me validate what I went through, I don't feel crazy anymore, that's kind of one of the biggest first steps. So
Yeah, I guess a lot of people will think, oh, will underplay it maybe, and sort of say, oh, you know, it's not that big a deal. I can deal with it myself. You know, keep going through that cycle of, it's been a year now and I still feel like I can deal with it myself, you know.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? That makes sense, right? That response makes a lot of sense, you know, especially with the societies that we're conditioned under. And if you think about a lot of people that are in these situations, we're usually surrounded by people that have not gone through it, and or people that are just ready to, you know, let's move past it. Like, are you talking about that again? You're not talking about that again. You know what I mean? Like, did it really affect you that much? And that can be re-traumatizing, right?
Right.
Or you're around people that, you know, let's just say you are still in community with the person or with the narcissist or the high conflict person, because it could be somebody in your family. It can be, I have a lot of clients that have children with narcissistic people, and it is one of the most difficult things that you will ever go through in your life when you can have to co-parent with a narcissist, you know? And a lot of times people around you that don't really understand it, and it's not their fault that they don't, but they don't really, you know, have a grasp on it, will try to teach you how to kind of, they're teaching you how to kind of like take a punch, right? You know what I mean? Or they're teaching you like, when they jab left, you duck right, right? And it's like, yeah, you know what? I'm actually not interested in like absorbing a punch or how to like defend myself. But, like, I can do that. It's not, you know, it's not a skill issue. It's a will issue. You know, I've taken punches. I've ducked a couple times, you know, my entire life. Like, I don't want to do that. I actually don't want to be, you know, in relationships with people that I have to constantly defend myself to, you know? Mm-hmm. And general bystanders don't really get that. They're going to tell you, especially if it's a family member, especially if it's somebody that they know as well, they're going to tell you, well, you know, they're just difficult. That's just how they are. You just have to, you know, get on with it, right? You just have to, you know, learn how to take it and don't respond in that way. Don't react in that way, because maybe you're part of the problem. And that is what is very re-traumatizing, right? So people have to really understand that, you know, you need to go to somebody that has a lived experience when it comes to this. So you're not being re-traumatized by thinking it's your fault. And then you're not, you know, changing who you are as a person and keeping yourself in harm's way because the people around you can't understand setting boundaries or cutting the communication off completely, going no contact.
Right. And what if you can't, like you say, cut the communication off completely, and you're doing all this work on yourself, but the other person's doing no work, then what?
That is usually the case, right? Because they, you know, unfortunately they never change, you know what I mean? It actually gets worse with age. So, especially if they're, you know, high on the range of being narcissistic. So they're not doing the work, even if they say they are. You know, there's a lot of tools. There's, you know, something, you know, everybody knows about boundaries, you know, setting healthy boundaries. Setting healthy boundaries aren't about punishing anybody. It's just about knowing where your limits are and how to protect yourself, keep yourself, you know, safe emotionally. And then there's something that is a lovely tool called gray rocking. And I think this helped me the most and helps my clients the absolute most. And that it really encompasses just kind of not giving that person what they want, because narcissistic people, they feed off of emotional reactivity. That is their lifeblood. That's what they want from you. They want you to unravel. They want you to, you know, go crazy trying to explain yourself and defend yourself against all of the, you know, the fallacies that they make up. Okay. So with gray rocking, it's, you know, learning how to take a deep breath, you know, realize what's going on internally when you're being kind of attacked. And just, you know, giving them very short answers, no emotional reactivity. Say, okay, cool. If you feel that way, that's fine. You know, nothing. Do not feed the machine. You know what I mean? Don't feed the machine.
That must drive them nuts.
Oh, it drives them insane. It drives them absolutely insane. But when you do it enough time or enough times over time, it works. It really
does. And then they get bored, I guess, and move 100%. On to the next person.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's a primal thing. Like, there's the animals in the wild that can't even eat a prey once they play dead. That's why animals play dead, right? This is what gray rocking is, okay? So if a prey comes and, you know, they're trying to devour you and they're attacking you and you play dead, you don't give them what they want, a lot of animals just leave. That's what narcissists do.
Wow. You know what I mean? Never even thought about it like that. That's wild.
Yeah. It's super, super primal. So that's what the gray rocking is, and it will save you your sanity. It really, truly will. And there's a lot of other things too when it comes to maybe like co-parenting with a narcissist, or when it's a, you know, a family member, you know, keeping the communication very short, keeping the communication over just text messages so you can prove what you actually said. You know, just, you know, having those emotional boundaries around your time and that kind of thing. But I think every situation is different. If you're in a situation where you're you know, emotionally unsafe or physically unsafe, then of course that would, you know, you would have to go no contact. But yeah, there are some situations where people have to, you know, they don't have to, but they choose to, you know, live in some form of communion with the narcissist. And yeah, you have to have those tools when it comes to protecting yourself and not giving them what they want, you know,
right.
Like, yeah,
that's the main thing, not giving them what they want.
Yeah, because then they'll move on to somebody else that will give them what they want. Believe me, they'll find somebody else. There's 8 billion people in this world. Let them move on to somebody else who's going to kind of feed the machine. But the main thing is to not be the person that gives them the supply. So,
right.
Yeah.
And where can people find you if they want to learn more or get in touch with you?
Yeah. You can find me on Instagram. So LoveBombMD. I have a website, lovebombedmd.com as well. And you can email me at healing@lovebombedmd.com. I have a lot of free resources. I have a lot of things just to kind of read over. I do a lot of kind of like longer think pieces just to help you, even if you're not ready for coaching. So
your Instagram is brilliant. I'm always loving your posts that you put on there. So highly recommend giving you a follow. Megan, it's been so wonderful to talk to you. I could literally talk to you all day, I feel like, about this subject. I'm learning so much. And you're so like relaxed and easy to talk to. I think some people think that maybe it's going to be quite a formal, terrifying experience, right, to get coaching. But you're very relaxed and easy to talk to.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. Honestly, that's the kind of environment that I'm going to create. You know, healing is all about safety. That is the number one thing that we as humans need, and especially if you went through a, you know, traumatic experience. So it's all about healing and, you know, feeling safe in your body. And that's what coaching is. It's co-regulation. You know, like your waters may be choppy and stormy over here, but I'm going to bring you all to my safe, calm boat and we're good, you know. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, Megan, thank you so much for being my guest on A Brit in LA.
Yay. I'm so excited to have had this conversation with you. Thank you so much.
After recording today's episode, I jumped straight on the phone to my best mate back home, Noel Sullivan of Hearsay fame. Here's our latest fun chat. This was like a really different conversation for me to have. I like learned so much from Megan about various things like love bombing. Do you know about love bombing?
Lauren, all I'm going to say is I think that this hour with this lady was the therapy you've always needed and couldn't afford.
Absolutely. Why do you think I got her on the show?
Well, there you go. Because you're smart. Because you're wisening up, kids. I've taught you something.
I know, but I didn't know the actual term of love bombing. I literally, her website is called like Love Bombing MD. And I was like, what's love bombing? I was like, I just thought that was like a cute term, but like it's an actual thing. Do you know?
I think I know what it is. Is it not when somebody like smothers you with love until you think you're in the most brilliant position of your life and then absolutely turns on you and controls you like a crazy?
Exactly.
Is that it?
Exactly.
I don't think that's how it, if you looked it up, it probably wouldn't describe it.
No,
exactly,
she described
that,
it much better than that. Yeah, much more eloquently than that.
But essentially... That's why she gets paid the big bucks. That's why she's the MD of love bombing and I'm just stupid Noel.
Exactly. But, you know, like I thought in this industry, particularly, there are a lot of, you know, egos flying around. There are a lot of difficult...
narcissistic bastards.
Yeah,
that's
and
what
I thought it would be like a really interesting conversation to have. Also, like, I didn't realize there were so many different types of narcissists.
Oh yeah, as many as there are flowers in the garden and clouds in the sky.
Yeah, so it was really interesting to be like, huh, that's a type of narcissism. Interesting.
Dated that one.
Yeah, tick that one off the list.
yeah, you've ticked all the flowers in the garden. If we're still using that weird analogy.
But yeah, I also was like, how do you know, and this is probably not a question, I don't know whether it's a good question or not, how do you know if you're not the victim and you're the problem?
You know you're the problem. Well, I don't think you know you're the problem.
Exactly, that's what she said.
Because narcissists wouldn't know.
Exactly.
No, they would never know because they think everything that they do is perfect.
Exactly, which I think is an interesting thing to think about. Like if you're like the poor victim who's finally comes, like realizes that this is happening to them, but does the narcissist ever go, oh, hang on a minute?
No, the narcissist is too busy looking in the mirror.
Indeed. But it was like, I came away from the conversation feeling like I needed another hour with her time, at least.
Oh, for sure. Lauren, you could benefit from... probably a 6-week
daily session, I'd say.
Yeah,
I mean, you're over it now, but I've been there a long time with you.
And you have. Definitely. You've been along the ride for some of the high conflict relationships that I've been in.
I love high conflict. I love that. It makes it sad. It gives it just, you know. Also, it's good because then you realise that it wasn't you being a loon the entire time. You were actually being treated awfully by awful people, but they don't know. They're having a lovely life still. So
I find that this at times is quite a high conflict relationship, the one that you and I have.
Yeah, but neither of us are narcissists. We're too codependent for that.
I know. I did step off from the call going, what if I am a narcissist? I wouldn't know.
Yeah, Googling yourself.
Googling my symptoms.
pure behaviour of a narcissist right there.
What's Lauren Samuels been up to today? Who's searching for Lauren Samuels? No. Anyway.
I think that is the perfect moment to end this conversation, Lauren. On that bombshell.
Yeah. Love you. You've been listening to A Brit in LA with me, Lauren Samuels. Thanks to my incredibly insightful guest today, Megan Doughty-Asimi. Thanks to my pal, Noel Sullivan, back home. And thank you to you guys for listening. If you're enjoying the podcast, remember to like, follow and review. It really goes a long way in keeping this show afloat. You can always get in touch with me via our website, abritinla.fm. Give me a follow on the old socials. I'm at Lauren Samuels 88. That's on Insta, Twitter, TikTok, you know the jam. Have a wonderful week until we meet again, guys. And as always, wherever you are in the world, go for your dreams. TTFN.